What's your question?
Well, I would like Hemat to tell me the right pronunciation of this mantra that I think is Aka Sama Raja Sada Rasa Maraja Pe. It's in the commentary of the Heart Sutra. I'm going to write it down.
Yeah, just send it to me and then we can have a chat later on.
Okay, thank you.
And Carmen, for some reason, you're very echoey, but I don't know why.
Yeah, Carmen, you have my email address. I'll take a look at it and then maybe we can just chat for a few minutes, okay?
And hi, Francesco and Alessandra. And Dinesh.
Good evening.
Good evening. And let's see, what time is it? It's 7 o'clock on the dot right now. So I'll just go ahead and let you know that tonight is the last class of this module on the wisdom of emptiness. And what I really want to direct your attention to is that in November, Khenpo Rinpoche will be coming, and the first teaching will be on November 5th, which is a Saturday, and the last will be on November 30th, so for the whole month of November. So to check out the teachings and initiations that will be done or be conferred during his visit, definitely keep checking the website, the Kadampa Center website. And on that very first homepage, there are, you know, it's called a banner. It like scrolls through different pictures. The very first one is Khenpo Rinpoche. And if you just click on that, it will take you to a page where there's lots of information. And we will continue to update that information. Right now, we don't have everything. But be patient with us. And we're working on that behind the scenes to get everything up and make sure that it's all correct and everything. But there will be an opportunity. There will be a refuge ceremony where you can take refuge as well as the refuge vows and bodhisattva vows during that ceremony. And then there will be four different tantra initiations. So you can read about those online. All right. With that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Hemant. I'm showing that it's 7:02, so we'll go ahead and get started. Oh, one more thing. Sorry, Hemant. This is module 12, and module 13, as you know, is intro to tantra. And I think I told you last week, I wasn't sure what was going to happen with the dates for that module. I still don't know. So again, just keep checking the website for information and we'll figure out what we're going to do with that module in light of Khenpo Rinpoche's visit and then, you know, December and all the holiday stuff following in December. So keep an eye out on the website and we'll let you know what we're going to do about that module. Okay. Sorry, Hemant, you can take it now.
No problem. There's Chitra joining. Okay, guys. Well, first of all, before we even start, let's do our three bow downs first and just do some prostrations, at least mentally. So let's do that. And then let's bring our attention in this class today. This is the last class, but before we start the calm abiding meditation, I want to really, really thank Linda for all the support she's given me. This is not an easy task, class after class for DB. It's a great support for the DB teachers. And without Linda, it would be very confusing for us.
Thank you so much, Hemant. It's really my pleasure.
It is definitely one of the paramitas of your time generosity You know, we all have families, but to come class after class and support the teachers, and it allows us to do this teaching, is fantastic, and it benefits so many people. So I appreciate that very much. And I want to also thank the Kadampa Center for allowing me to be able to do this. And thank you guys for attending the class, folks, because there's no class if there's no people to listen to it.
Thank you,
Hemant, for teaching. None of us would be here if you weren't here.
So I appreciate that. So thank you, everyone. So let's just bring our mind in the present moment. We had a busy day, if not a long day. But right now, this next hour and a half belongs to us at this moment in time to learn a little bit more about this profound subject of emptiness, the wisdom of emptiness, selflessness, voidnessness, soundlessness, however you want to call it, but it is something that we have been learning about. So today is the last class. So let's just bring our mind here and see if we can listen to this one more time. Okay. So get your mind again. You know the position to be in for meditation. You want to keep your back straight, right? You want to keep your head down a little bit. The hands are a little apart, the right palm over your left, the thumbs are touching, eyes are slightly open, mouth and jaws are relaxed, tongue on the top palate behind the teeth. Okay, and just bring your mind to yourself and scan your body to see if there's any discomfort any place. And if not, all you're going to do is focus on your breath. Very normal, very natural breathing. Don't push it, don't force it. Just simply pay attention to it. And when you see your stomach coming out as you inhale, and then it's going back and inhale, you can just focus on that movement, or some people prefer to focus on their nostrils as they're breathing in and out. So let's just do that for a while. And when you find yourself swaying away, moving away, or getting caught into a thought, just gently remind yourself to bring it back to your breath. It improves the mind, it improves the concentration, and it brings your concentration to a good place. Okay? So let's just do that for a few minutes. Okay, with a little better state of mind, calmness, let's set up our motivation. So we have finally reached the last session. Remember our discipline that at the start of each session, we remind ourselves to establish this motivation that will obtain the most beneficial results of the efforts we exert here. So listen to the presentation in order to achieve supreme enlightenment, like that of Shakyamuni, so that you will be a perfect cause for the happiness of all living beings, pervading space and time. We have spent about This will be the fifth session. However, this is a lifetime practice. So where you go from here, listen to many teachings on emptiness from qualified teachers and study the authoritative texts on emptiness. There are lots of books on emptiness written by authors who are widely accepted as authorities on this subject, and those are the best choices for your study. However, it is difficult to read these books in their original language. Consequently, we rely on translations. So further, it is not likely that you'll find a translation of one of those classics without a commentary supplied by the translator. So be aware of it. There are also interpretations that claim permission from authors of these classics, or at least from scholars of those books who have demonstrated a beneficial understanding that anyone on the path to liberation and enlightenment would want to have. So among these oral traditions are those that provide credible legitimacy to their claims of being true heir to the understanding of the authors or realized scholars. So try your best to study a classic from someone who holds one of these authentic oral traditions, and hopefully that teacher teaches you in the language or has the equally skillful interpreter. So make a strong determination that you will continue to do this. This is a lifetime practice. Thank you. So today's intent is to give you as we come to the end of this module of Wisdom of Emptiness, a profound and a life-changing topic. So we'll review some topics that we've covered to put them in some sort of a perspective for you. There's a lot of different things we talk about, right? We've gone through so many topics, teachers, some names, some definitions, and so forth. And sometimes you just want to put it in a package and see how everything kind of is helpful for our mind to understand this topic. So today we just finished our motivation. We'll go through a high-level review. There are some questions, and this is very important. A lot of times we can think in our mind, we can kind of get, I kind of get it type thing, you intellectualize it. But when you can talk with your spiritual buddy or a friend or a brother or a sister or somebody from Kadampa Center or any of your community, simply having a conversation as you evolve is also very important, because sometimes you find they have a perspective you may not know, or they may be a little more advanced than you are, or they may answer a question you may have, or the other way around. But sometimes I also find myself, as I'm teaching this class, that I know quite a bit in my head from reading books and learning and Geshe La's teachings and so forth. But when you have to verbalize it, you kind of have to put things in right format in your head to be able to talk about it. It has to be settled in your mind a little bit, right? You need to be able to articulate it. So we'll go through some questions later on, and then we'll have an open session to discuss a few things. I'll again provide you some resource list, and then we'll do last meditation on selflessness of phenomena. Because the last two classes focused on the four-point analysis. We talked about I can't find the I that I'm looking for, but now we also need to look at the entire phenomena. Okay? So and then we'll dedicate. Make sense to you? Okay. All right. Just to give you an idea, we'll go through a very quick overview. I'm not going to go through every step and all that kind of stuff, but to touch the main topics, session one, session two, session three, and session four. Okay? So we'll start with session one. Okay? So if you remember, we started with a video. It was a wonderful video put out by FPMT. Richard Gear is the one who narrated it. And then for each topic, they have a little snippets of talking points where the FPMT teachers, venerables, they give you a little taste of what that topic is all about, right? It was a half an hour, 26-minute video, some beautiful things from Venerable Karen Bellham, and then you hear also Venerable Robina. You hear and also a student's perspective once they've learned the topic. So you get a little taste of what the topic is all about. And then we did a little introduction to the wisdom of emptiness, right? And we went all the way back to following the footstep of the great, great masters. So let me move forward. And I also talked about some of the inspiration I get from some of the readings we have. So no, we also have a lot of requirements, some books, Virtue and Reality, Mahamudra, you know, Heart, Essence of the Heart. So there are quite a bit of books out there. But I found myself going back to old couple of years ago, attracted to just the topic, Introduction to Emptiness. I wanted to go to like basics, but it got me going. And, you know, some of the things it even started out with, that we somehow feel that we have this solid, permanent existence until we think about death and we know we gotta go. That's when I read that, I started to get interested in this topic. And I'll tell you one more thing. When Geshe-la was visiting me, this is about 13, 14 years ago, and I asked him, is there something I need to follow sincerely? And he says, for you, he calls me Panditji, learn emptiness. Lo behold, when we were doing DB classes, I was asked to teach emptiness, so I had to truly get into it. So it works out really good for me, so I appreciated that. And then we looked at the history. You know, we understood that the antidote to the obstacles to liberation is to really understand the emptiness. We had advice from the masters, and you also needed to know that it comes all the way from Buddha, right? It comes all the way from Buddha in his second turning of the wheel, where he talked about emptiness. The Heart Sutra was taught, right? And of course, he taught differently to different group of people based on their mental abilities. Then, as you know, there are 84,000 teachings. They were organized into three baskets, if you remember. The teachings of discipline called Vinaya. The second one was all the discourses he taught. And the third one was what they called the teachings of the knowledge. Then they were further divided for what they call the Mahayana and the Hinayana. They're two vehicles, right? Individual vehicle and the compassionate side of the vehicle, which is the universal vehicle. And again, both of them are very important. Just the scope of it is a little different. We talked about how individual vehicle is more pertaining to a individual liberation, whereas the universal vehicle, as it says, universal, thinks about all sentient beings and to develop bodhicitta, right? Very important piece of this, to become enlightened. Whereas the Hinayana talks more about personal liberation. Okay, so those are the two things. Not that one is lower and one is higher. We need both. You need to have a liberation, have wisdom of emptiness, and move forward for the full enlightenment through having bodhicitta and also following the five paths of bodhisattvas we talked about last class, which I'll repeat again this evening. So you kind of have to put that in perspective. And why did we do this? So that you feel comfortable that these teachings are not made up by somebody out, that we have a lineage teaching all the way from Buddha himself, his disciples, and then masters and sages like Nagarjuna, who were scholars, profound writers, and then the commentary from Chandrakirti. And then we can go on to many names like Aryadeva and other ones. But then Lama Tsongkhapa, our true lineage Gelug traditions teacher, who led the way in formation of our Gelug tradition. And so it comes all the way down from that. And our teachers, all the way from Sarah J. teacher, Kensho Rinpoche, and Geshe-la, and Geshe Sangpo, and all the teachers. So you can see it is just comes down from that. So this is not just anecdotal taking from this and that. Is put together all the way from those teachings, and that's what you are getting, okay? So I think it's important to know that when you establish a topic like this, if you're an analytical person, especially in the West, we want to know who said this. What does it mean to me? Where does it come from? How do I know this is true? So it's important to establish it. Okay? So again, just to repeat, we went through session two. We again went through some brief historical background, and I emphasized Nagarjuna's quotes, and I think I have it written down. Let's see. it's okay, it will come to me in a minute, I think. And then we went to who was Lama Tsongkhapa, and we talked about what Buddha realized under the Bodhi tree, and we talked about the 12 links. We just barely touched Heart Sutra because it was important at the time. And then we did a nice meditation on awareness during the death meditation. So when Buddha was under the Bodhi tree in his final day of meditation, so he was called Shakyamuni Buddha, right? Shakyamuni. His real name was Gautama Siddhartha, right? He was a king, prince. He went and was searching for the truth. And eventually he came and sat under the Bodhi tree. And the night when he was enlightened, when he woke up from his meditation, he was then known as Buddha. And the translation is the awakened one. So he was an awakened one. And he realized that, you know, my goodness, he realized that through ignorance, sentient beings then engage in actions. Because of ignorance. And from actions, the consciousness arises. And then from consciousness, the name and the form arise in our mind. So think about all the classes we've gone through, how the mind does not see the reality the way it is. And therefore, all of a sudden, there is this solid I that settles in. The I that now gets attached has the anger, has the desire, and all of those things. So from that name, form arises. We see the shape as solid. And from the name and form, the senses arise. And depending on the senses, there's a contact and sense objects. And then from depending on the contact, feeling arises. And from feeling, you have the craving that a desire arises. And from craving, he realized there's grasping going on. And then from grasping, that's who you become. That's your mind. It's always there. And remember, we talked a little bit about your personal identity. It's not your license. It's not your name. It's what's prevalent before you pass. And what is going on in your head, that's who you are. And then that has the propensity to move forward into different various stages of birth and death cycles. And it circles you back in life again and again and again. And so you become that. Then when you have the birth, that's where you want to go. That's where your mind wants to go. And you start again in age and death cycle again. So he realized that. So if you think about the Four Noble Truths, in samsara, we have issues. I won't even call it dukkha because it's a wrong, suffering is a wrong translation. Everything from aging, sickness, death, anxiety, name it, just put it into a bucket. Okay? That doesn't mean you don't have pleasure. You don't have happiness. That's not what it's saying. But those are temporary. Show me happiness that's permanent. Right? We talked about it. If you, even when you get something new, you're excited for about 2 weeks and it goes away. You have a nice car, you get all excited and pleasure is there. You feel good about it. Then the first rock hits it. Then what happens? There it goes. Right? We go through this cycle. But anyways, over totality, we do age, we will die. We have anxiousness and all that. That's called dukkha. What did he say, number two? There's causes for it. Ignorance, and your cause, attachment, aversion, the three poisons, and anger. Then he says there is cessation. So if there's a cessation of ignorance, there is a cessation of action arising from ignorance. Think about it. And if you have a cessation of those ignorant actions, there's a cessation of consciousness arising such action. And it goes on. Then you have a ceasing of the name and the form and the grasping and the craving. And ultimately, you have a liberated mind. And therefore, you can liberate. And what is the fourth noble truth? There is a path. Right? So that's where this is all coming from. So you have to at least realize that's important to understand the very first one. The root cause is ignorance. So by liberating oneself, you need to get rid of that ignorance. You cut the root problem, and then you get liberated. Right? Easy to say. So we had to go through some classes to show you how ignorance works, what is dependent arising, how we have personal identity, we have already ignorant mind. We kind of think this body and this aggregates to be one solid being. We see things appearing solid. And then we went to a couple of examples of it. So we'll go through that a little bit, just to give you a reference. Then you saw this beautiful picture, Wheel of Life. Again, when you go to Sarajev, when you go to Kadampa Center, you will see this at the entrance in many of these monasteries. Again, it's called a Wheel of Life. And it tells you the very center are the three animals. And of course, there's all kind of nice teachings on this. But in short, the three animals represent the three poisons. The attachment, the aversion, the ignorance, right? That's the images. Then the second layer, you see the black and the white. Those are the represents karma, the good karma and the bad karma. And depending on the good karma, you go to the next wheel, you wind up in the upper realms, they call it. And then if you have a bad karma, you wind up in the lower realms on the right, right? Then you look at the fourth layer. Those are the 12 links that keeps us in this cycle of samsara. Okay, if you look at it very carefully, bad karma, good karma, but you're still in that cycle. You just go through different realms, different states of mind, and then you revolve in this samsara. And then if you look at the figure about holding in the claws, that represents impermanence. Okay? And then you see the moon on the left side, on the top, it represents that you can be liberated. It's a liberation. Liberation from cyclic existence. And Buddha pointing to it says there's a path. Isn't that neat? I think it's a beautiful picture. I love that because it kind of puts things in perspective. And then if you really get a chance to look at the pictures and what it shows and all that, it's kind of nice to understand it, how it's depicted. But if you even understand the path to the liberation or path to liberation from Lama Tsongkhapa, it's sort of a lumbering type of things. You need to recognize precious human rebirth, karma, taking refuge, what happens after karma, the Four Noble Truths, the suffering, and then you realize emptiness. You need to create renunciated mind. You develop liberation, learn bodhicitta, equanimity, and practice the six perfections. And there goes the whole cycle of lamrim in short. But so it's very important to kind of, sometimes it's interesting to show this. He then introduced Heart Sutra very shortly, like only a little bit. I really didn't get into it in this class. Why? Because we were talking about emptiness. We were talking about how this language for ordinary people, form is empty. And then if you remember some of the cups and the Harry Potter, and we'll take a look at it quickly again, just to remind you, we kind of prove the fact that things are made up of names and thoughts. And if you really look at it very carefully, you know, they may exist conventionally, but when you start to look at it carefully, there is no real existence of that. Okay? They exist relatively or conventionally. But when you really have a deeper look at it, things don't have a true existence of their own. And that's why I wanted to show form is empty, emptiness is form. And then it goes to show, and if you remember the video we saw last time, a little difficulty with it, but he put it in perspective that even you don't look at emptiness as a separate topic, okay, from form. And to bring it together, it says emptiness is form, form is emptiness, like that. So it's all the same. Okay? And so then in a very short form, it talks about this mantra, thus it is like this. Go beyond, go way beyond, and be awakened. Gate gate, para gate, para samagate bodhisoha. I will talk about that. And for the advanced or highly thinking people, remember the five paths. We'll cover it shortly. But in first two, gate gate is talking about path of accumulation. Second one is talking about path of preparation. The third, paragate, is talking about path of seeing. Parasamagate is path of meditation. And ultimately, you become enlightened. That is bodhi, awakened one. So very beautiful, short mantra that talks about the how reality is. Okay? Then we talked about ignorance, okay? Because now we talked about the very root cause is in ignorance, isn't it? So we had to talk about ignorance. It is not the ignorance of I don't know how to spell something. I don't know what a blue color looks like. This is misknowledge of reality. Okay? It is an active misknowledge of we don't know how things exist. Okay? So if you look at things very carefully, it's natural to apprehend things the way they exist. It's because we've been thinking that way many, many births, I guess, if you want to take a look at it. And then what happens, our mind has this, we've already trained our mind to see things the way we see now conventionally. There are also other factors we talk about. We talked about, I think, external conditions sometimes can play a game on us. You know, when you're sitting in a car and another car moves you, like you think you're moving, mind can play some games with us. That tells you that our mind can see things the way it wants to see or it's trained to see. We can also have sicknesses and illnesses, which is an internal problem, right? That can also sometimes cause our mind to see things differently. And the last thing, think about anger. Think about anger and hatred. When you are angry, do you think you're thinking correctly? Look at what anger can do. We talked about how shootings take place, people killing each other, and for no reason. That's how anger can throw your mind off, right? So you can see this, our mind is very important, what we put into our mind, how we see things. And even intellectually, if you were to just understand for a moment that we get into this drama simply because how we project from our mind, it will taper you down, simply knowing that this is not important. You know, just if you can't help it, at least don't mess it up. You don't need two angry people now. Geshe always says, before one person was crazy, now you got mad at them, so now they're two crazy people. So he always says that, and it sticks with me all the time. So then we went through some really nice examples. So let me see if I have it here. Okay, so here, this is just to repeat what I just said, that we have external conditions, internal conditions, strong emotions. Our pride may not let us admit our ignorance, and we're too lazy to research the correct information. Right? So it just kind of repeats what I just said. Okay. Again, we'll go through the examples, but before we go to the examples, I introduced you to the 4 points analysis. And the reason for that was that, you know, first you establish what is it that you're looking for. Okay, remember the example? If I told you Linda was behind the pillar, please, you will find Linda behind that pillar. Well, when you go there, you expect Linda to be there. Okay, so same way, we talked about this conventional I, which is a mere I, which exists, which functions, which loves, which grows, which where we are. However, we are looking for that I that sees everything concrete, self-existent, that exaggerated I that we feel when something calls you stupid or idiot or says you are the best thing in the world and what a wonderful something happens in here. That's what we are looking for. That ego that comes all the way to our head. Okay? Instead of looking at us merely existing in the phenomena and doing what we do and having an understanding, that's the I we are looking for. So then the 4-point analysis says, let's look for that I. But if that I exists, it must be there either with a body-mind complex or independent of it. It has to be somewhere in the system. This is a logical way of looking at things. This again goes to show the point that when we are talking with people, think our mind is already half the time we are not even listening to them. So we misapprehend sometimes and we want to say something before they even have concluded what they have to say. We don't even absorb what they're saying. So our mind is always doing things based on our capacity, right? So to be factful, fact-finding, slow down, listen carefully. In the same way, this is a logical way of looking at facts. If somebody says, it is in me somewhere, I feel it, then it must be findable. So this is a logical way of looking at it. Well, how does it exist? Is it my mind? Is it my body? Is it the aggregates? Is it the combination? What is it? So this kind of analysis helps you understand. Then you have to look at it with it. Is it part of the aggregates? Now, aggregate includes the form and the mind. Form, feeling, discrimination, all those mental factors and consciousness, which is your mind. So it's with either body-mind complex, or it's independently by itself somewhere hanging in there. So this four-point analysis goes through the meditation, and so you find out whether that self exists or does not exist. So we went through a meditation like that. Okay, so it was important to understand what the four-point analysis talks about. And then we went through those examples. And if you remember, let's see if I have more. No, I don't. So I will talk about it a little bit here and there. So the cup, we talked about a cup is a very common example we give. You know, we talk about when we look at a cup, we call it a cup. We conventionally agree that something that looks like this is a cup, or here is a glass. We conventionally agree that's a glass. Another way to look at it is, so we concretize it, we said that's a glass. But then glass or a cup is just a name given to something. There are other cups in your home right now. Dinesh has cups in cupboard, Linda has cups there, somebody in India has cups, somebody in Tibet has cups, somebody in China, Vietnam has cups. Those are just cups. That is not this cup. So it's a name given conventionally to be able to have language, to be able to talk with each other. But when you really look at the content of the cup, it's mere label. And then when you look at what cup is made up of, for example, sand particle, maybe ceramic, some are plastic, and then they're broken down into molecules, into atoms, into nanoparticles. So then which is the cup? The particles, the sand, the ceramic, the plastic. So you can look at it that way. In phenomena, everything is like that. It has so many causes and conditions. So things just labeled do not exist from their own side. In other words, there are so many other causes or dependent arisings for it to be there. Remember, we talked about cause and effect. The cause must precede an effect. Somebody had to make the cup. Somebody had to mold it. Some factory had to mass produce it. Somebody had to bring it to the store. Somebody had to earn the money to go buy it. And then you chose that particular one. So it is still valid to say for conventional purposes, this is a glass that I will drink out of. But just merely the name glass is a universal name. And that itself does not exist from its own side. That was the main point. Then we give another example of Harry Potter. It was made by a producer who made up a story of a Harry Potter or Indiana Jones, whichever you're familiar with. It's so real in our mind, isn't it? You can, if you've seen a movie, you can visualize it. That's how our mind sees things. But does it exist? Truly, it does not exist. It's merely a story. That's how our mind is. And so these examples are just leading you to see and dissect how we see things and make it real in our head. Everything is like that. So then we looked at rainbows. We see a rainbow, but if you look at it, it's made up of water molecules and light refracting through it. Neither of them are rainbows, and they themselves have causes and conditions, and go on and on and on. But we see it, we call it, so it becomes a rainbow. Conventionally, yes. If I see a rainbow in the sky, I say, that's a beautiful rainbow. But if you really look at it carefully, does it exist from its own side? It has causes and conditions. So mere names do not exist. Things with mere names given to it do not exist from their own side. So again, another example. Then we went to sound, Kopan, where Lama Zopa Rinpoche would have the hippies come down in Kopan Monastery and purposely say bad, something bad to them, oh, you stupid guy. And then he would say, are you upset? And the guy would say, darn, I am. You know, then he says, what did you not like? The word, the language, the vowels, the consonants, what part of what I said you did not like? And he wanted to prove a point that you got upset because you created that story of insult, or I didn't feel good about that word. It means something. So we created that anger in our minds. He just wanted to prove a point that mere words and sounds. It's just another. And then we talked about countries and boundaries. We know when we go from North Carolina to South Carolina and Florida, we have these names and titles and languages. We can concretely see that we are getting into some place But look at the other sentient beings, the insect moving from Colorado or to Alabama or from Alabama to somewhere else. Do they know that is they're moving the state? Or if they go into Mexico, they need a visa? Or if they go to Canada, they need something? No, they don't. We simply created this in our mind. We concretize it on a map. We drew some lines, and now we see it. So again, this is just trying to give you a little taste of how we see things. It's okay to have a conventional language. It is okay to have that, but also develop a mind of the ultimate nature of things. See it a little further than that, and that will bring a lot of this drama down in your mind. Okay, just a little idea behind that. So, okay, and then session four, I'll just go through it rather than giving the slide. I wanted to make sure that we make connections. We don't want to lose when we're talking about cups and the logic and the Nagarjuna and the dependent arising. The mind goes different places, but you want to put it together in a simplest form. That first of all, be have some affirmation in your mind, have some confirmation that the teachings are coming from our lineage teachers. That there are two truths that they talk about, relative truth and ultimate truth. Relatively, we all exist. We perceive things. The phenomena is there. We see it. But how we concretize this is the problem. So we need to look at the ultimate truth, the emptiness of selflessness. The phenomena are dependent arising. And if you talk about dependent arising, causes and condition and emptiness, they're kind of similar in a way, right? If things are not concrete and they're impermanent, they're moving along and causes are making the effect, and then the causes are making more effect, it goes on and on and on. That's why we are able to change. That's why things happen. Look at the autumn leaves. Look at the trees. Look at our age. We are also a product coming from our parents. We are not the same people we were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Right? Everything is moving. Causes and conditions are taking place. So you cannot be a concrete, just a static being. So all phenomena is like that. And then we talked about, of course, we went through ignorance because we want to get rid of this kind of thinking. We want to have this ultimate nature to understand how reality is. So we talked about that, which leads to obstacles, results in recycling to samsara. You saw the 12 links, and that's why we have birth, suffering, sickness, old age, and death. And then the wisdom of emptiness liberates it. Because now you see things, how phenomena truly exist, and we work on it. We work on it till you start to, from intellectualizing it, you are always have three things. You listen, you're reading and listening and so forth. Then you're analyzing it. Got to really think deeply how things are and why don't you see it, right? You go through that process slowly and steadily, lifelong learning. And ultimately, you will see how that ignorance starts to go away. Okay? And then you will reach a point of wisdom of emptiness. And then ultimately, the goal is to become enlightened, have perfect compassion, wisdom, and power. We have beautiful definitions on what a Buddha is. If that's the job you're looking for, your nature, your Buddha, your mind is Buddha nature. It's fully aware, it's clear, it's all-knowing. But we've been putting a lot of stuff in it, like muddy water. And then we see things so concrete, and then we develop this ignorance because we are in samsara. And then we have fear and anger and all this. And once you understand how things truly are, you kind of cut out of some of those things. So you need to work on that and meditate on it. Okay? So it was just a quick way of rechecking everybody to bring back to the same topic again. We again went to session four. We went into deeper into four-point analysis. And then we ended with a nice meditation on I with the four-point analysis. So we went through that. Okay? And then in session four, we looked at since we talk about dependent arising, we looked at the three types. That even if you look at it from a very mundane, conventional point of view, you need parts, right? And you need causes and conditions, and you need thoughts and labels. That's how we see things. So, for example, in the smallest level, we talked about a blade of grass. You need a seed. Right? Now, seed comes from a tree, so it has causes and conditions. For purposes of understanding, the part is the seed. then you need to have causes and conditions. It needs to be in the ground properly, has to have a certain amount of moisture or sunlight in the right shade for that tree to have a blade of grass grow. Right? So causes and effect. Cause and effect can't be in the same place at the same time. That would be the concreteness. It's not that way. Everything has causes and conditions. Cause and effect. Okay? So we talked about a blade of grass. We gave an example of like a car. You know, we see a car, we title it a car, but there is no car from its own side. It had causes and conditions for somebody to make the tire, somebody to make the wheel, the steering wheel, and so forth. Eventually, it puts in, and then we title it car. So the car is not existing from its own side. It has causes and conditions. So you got to get that concept in your mind, that how we label it, and that's why we see it. So when I say to you, let's go in my car, you know it's going to have a four wheels and a little part and a steering wheel. We simply don't know what it looks like, but we'll go in a car. So conventionally, that's fine. Similarly, we are that way. We are also parts. Our blood, serum, red cells, white cells, nerves. Look at nourishment we get. ATP and energy we create from food. All this, all parts. We're different parts of the body. It's always regenerating, moving, aging, you know, whatever it does. So we are also parts. Causes and conditions are there. You have to eat to survive. You have nurturing from your parents or loved ones. You have relationship, mother, father, family, whatever. So there are a lot of that causes and conditions for you to have. You were given a name, right? And ultimately, you're also going to move on. Right? But we call you Ganesh, Linda, Heman, Barbara, whatever, right? And we see that. But if you really look back, we are all part of this phenomena. It causes and conditions. But you exist in a relative way. There is a mere self, and we perceive this parts, causes and conditions, and label. And so we perceive it does come in that way. But what we do is we make it permanent, like it's, that's it. That's the one person that's not changing. It is the way it is. But if I were to see somebody that I met 20 years ago, they would say, oh my gosh, you look so different. You're changing. So you got to have that in mind somewhere. And you got to analyze that. Sometimes it's very hard for the mind to get to go around it a little bit. Because we've been habituated thinking everything the way we see it and label it. But when you go through logic very, very carefully, and kind of intellectualize it, you get a glimpse of that. And my goodness, I get into drama for no reason, simply because we saw TV and somebody said a word, and that word bothered me. So I now don't like that part. Right? We do this all the time, so it will neutralize you a little bit. That's a good part. And so the words and concepts like Harry Potter, they don't exist. So a person is dependent arising. And in order for you to understand the quintessential teaching of Buddha on emptiness, you wanted to make sure the Bodhisattva's pathways. Why? Because the sections in the Heart Sutra are made for the ordinary people, but also for the higher advanced intellectual minds who are on the path, somewhere already way in the path. And we talked about from the bottom up, you start collecting merits, doing all the good things that you're supposed to do, from morality and generosity and ethics. You're following that, having the patience and developing bodhicitta. And the person in this first path spontaneously starts to have what they call bodhicitta mind. When they see somebody, they feel that I wish to become enlightened to benefit people. That's the natural being. Right now, you think about it, it's first me. Then everything else, right? Think about it for a while. I mean, some of you may be already up in the middle somewhere, but I'm talking in general terms. That's not to say that you cannot take care of yourself or love yourself. There's a little difference between holding and grasping and clinging onto me alone, and there's nothing else, like nobody who cares about anybody else. That's the difference, right? So they're accumulating merits. Why? Because they want to prepare to liberate themselves. That means they want to directly perceive emptiness. When they look, directly perceive emptiness. That's the path of seeing. So here you're accumulating merits like we are doing right now. You're listening to it. You're going to hopefully meditate. You've done some reading. You're going to contemplate. You're going to go to another class. You're going to go to another teacher. You're going to read and start to get some sense of what this is about and maybe incorporate it in your mind as you're walking, doing daily activities. Then you will reach a path of seeing where you will see the wisdom of emptiness directly. At that point, there are little 10 stages we talked about, not detailedly, but just there are other small steps that they are still working through, the minor afflictions that they may still have latent from karmic seeds or some part of laziness, or they had a habit of doing something may still occur occasionally. They're finite. At path of meditation, they're very close to becoming Buddha. And then no more learning because you're enlightened. You no longer. So these paths were important so you could see. And then I will also talk about the six perfections that we talked about, two wings. There's a wing of liberation or wing of emptiness, wisdom. So we are working through that. On the other hand, the mere eye that functions daily, that goes to job, that drinks a coffee in the morning, right? That eye can continue to develop. From my last meditation of Dr. Venerable Fuse, you can develop love. You can develop compassion. And that eye, it talks about the six perfections being the mind of generosity. That doesn't mean just money. People somehow straight mind goes to, no. It's all kind of generosity, your nature of giving, teaching, learning, time, helping out. All those things are part of generosity. The second one is morality. And we'll talk very briefly in the last section, very quickly, that in order to really get into emptiness in meditation, ethics is very important. Why? Because if your mind is in the wrong place mentally, how are you going to liberate yourself? You're already occupied with wrong thinking. So you need to develop some sort of a discipline to live in ethics. And when we say morality, it talks about morality of restraint from committing non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind. If you look at karma, we have the bad, non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind. And the second piece is says to create merits, morality of creating merits. Okay, and the third one is benefiting others. So when you live in this kind of mindset, you will see yourself in a much more blissful, disciplined way. And when these teachings come, they come a little better in your mind because you're not preoccupied with your habit of not thinking correctly or going somewhere, turmoil, anxiety, so many things. So it's important. So you have to know these two things in order to understand how the Heart Sutra was written. So when you talk about where it was, who was sitting, the time was right, the right teachers were there, right environment was there, the place was Rajagira, that's the common prologue. And the uncommon prologue would be the bodhisattvas and their disciples were so excited that this teaching was going to take place, so they came, right? Then there was an actual sutra that we actually go through, the form is empty, emptiness is form, and how Avalokiteshvara answered, right? Form is nothing than other than emptiness. Emptiness is nothing other than form. Form, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are all empty of inherent existence. So when it goes through that, it kind of ascertains in our mind that the things don't exist the way we see as a solid, concrete existence. But then it goes further into the details of the Heart Sutra that there is no coming, no going, no, it is stainless, non-stainless, all these words. It is a path of seeing. When you are in the nature, if you can see the wisdom of emptiness directly, you can see how things truly exist. You're not going to go and latch onto labels. You can see it. So that's why then the path of meditation goes even further. When you're in the path of meditation, you even lose, you're not thinking of, oh, Hemant is meditating. They're way beyond that in emptiness. There's no Hemant anymore, right? Hemant is not meditating. You're in total samatha, or 9-point equipoise meditation. Okay, you accomplished all of those stages into your ninth stage, complete pure meditation. At that point, ears, nose, eyes, all those things doesn't matter. Okay, so that's what he's talking about. That's for the sharp faculty people. And then when Buddha said how he admired the teachings, and that's the way it is, and people rejoiced. That is a confirmation that that's the way he saw it, that he was awakened, and that's what he wants people to know. So that was the Heart Sutra. Okay, so we went through that. Again, every topic relates to think about how things, causes and conditions, dependent arising, and we see this exaggerated view because our mind has a hard time understanding how things truly exist. So we gave you some examples and at least develop some understanding of that and analyze it and meditate on it. Okay? And there's two ways to do it. You do analytical meditation is one way to do your meditation on topics, small things. Then how come I feel this way? How come I see it this way? And work on it. And then when you start to feel that, you get a little insight, then you do a placement meditation. You focus on like a laser on that topic. That's called placement. You stay on it till you feel your question has been answered. If not, you need to do research. You need to go to Geshe-la, you need to go to teachers, that kind of stuff. But you move slowly till you get fully understand. You fully understand that particular topic. And again, I wanted to say the last words. I purposely put this in here. The last part is realizing emptiness. One goes, one is gone, one is gone beyond. You know those words, go beyond, go completely beyond and be awakened. So, aha, I wanted to make sure that you get an idea of what that is. Mantra of perfection of wisdom is declare. So now we have 15, 20 minutes to talk about it, some of these topics, okay? So it's kind of fun. I want you to be relaxed. This is not a quiz or checking you out or anything like that. But sometimes verbalizing it or attempting, it will help you solidify some of these thoughts. So if I were to ask you, first question, what is emptiness? Somebody wants to take a stab in answering that? Don't be shy.
And if so, just either unmute and start talking or raise your hand or wave.
Yeah, just try. Give it a shot. If somebody wants to say, so what's emptiness?
Can I ask you a question before?
Sure.
My question is, if you can talk a little bit about the relationship or the relation between bodhicitta and emptiness, because it's something that I've been struggling and anyway, all around Buddhism anyway, is this really intellectual development of thinking and analyzing, and then this somehow irrational sentiment of bodhicitta. And it looks like even in your slide, the fourth, that it looks like before you realize emptiness and then you have compassion, while I know that is not like that, but if you can... I'm sorry that I'm taking your question
instead,
but if you can explain a little bit more how you think it's these things works between bodhicitta and happiness and emptiness.
Sure. I think we have a precious human rebirth. You can see in the phenomena that can happen anytime. Number two, if the mind comes, if your thoughts are coming from the previous mind, the previous mind comes from its previous thought, it goes on. If you look at the phenomena, all sentient beings, Geshe-la would say, have been our mothers before. There's a relationship in this phenomena. Only we feel I'm a John and you are so-and-so and she's a Carmen and that's a Dinesh. But in phenomena, we are all interconnected. because of other people, you are here because of their help. So bodhicitta, if you want to take it technical, when you're thinking about others, you are not thinking about I selfishly. You're also thinking about other. Also, when Buddha woke up from his, when he became enlightened, the very first thing, he had opportunity to take back his kingdom. People wanted him in their kingdom. And he says, no, this knowledge must be shared with every sentient beings. I need to awaken everybody. There is immense benefit in doing so. Geshe-la has talked very deeply about different various factors that bodhicitta, first of all, when you give something to somebody, you feel good inside. And you like to receive also love. We all like to be loved. Nobody likes harshness. So then you can get into technicality of all that, but that is part of your develop as a human, as a human being in this life. So you're developing bodhicitta, but your ultimate goal is that when you become enlightened, you want to benefit everyone, all others, because you're able to see how the phenomena is, and you simply want to benefit others. And he's saying that this having this set of mind is very conducive. That is Buddha's nature. We talked about omniscience and omnipotent. Omnipotent is power to do whatever needs to be done to benefit others. That is its nature, Buddha nature. And so if you look at, if I would suggest to you, excuse me, if you were to go and read Lama Yeshe archives on bodhicitta, they give you very detailed teachings on what is bodhicitta. I would also suggest you talk to somebody like Rinpoche or Geshe-la, because they can take you into very technical ways of thinking about bodhicitta. It's an entire class. Bodhicitta is an entire topic we can talk about, but in general, if you understand, we are interrelated, interconnected. Our causes and conditions, because of others, we are able to eat and drink and survive. Think about it. Where does the food come from? Where does your income come from? Where does your home come from? People were not doing things, this would not be that way. So there is interconnectedness with everything. And there are causes and conditions based on your karma that you have what you have, and you have the propensity to do what you are doing and learning these things. So bodhicitta is a crucial part of development. And if you look at the Lam Rim teaching also, I can just say you in short, that the first one kind of first scope prepares you, second one tells you how things are in emptiness, but the third one specifically talks about equanimity in bodhicitta mind. And that mind is important to understand this fully. You can learn this and intellectualize it, but to truly perceive it directly, there's a state of mind that is required. And I can only say that I have a faith in my teacher and teachings, and it says that you need to develop bodhicitta. That is the Mahayana path. Now, if you were to go and if you want to just simply liberate yourself individually, you can certainly do that by understanding emptiness. You will still be a very compassionate human being. Nothing wrong. But Mahayana path goes, they talk about a higher level of nirvana in some way of conventional way of talking, and which requires that you have both. You have a liberated mind and you have developed bodhicitta. That's all I can answer right now.
Okay, thank you. I have some points that I will think about it. And anyway, about your question, my first answer is, I think that the first question, everything has to be empty of something. And so it depends on, obviously,
nothing a cup arises from its own side.
Yes, a cup has to be empty of what? Of sugar, so is or. Or obviously of, so it.
That's fantastic. That's really good. let me put it succinctly. All of the points were right. You can say, of course, you call it shunyata and selflessness and egolessness, but it's the absence of true inherent existence, which is empty of existing from its own side or independently. It is the ultimate truth and its characteristics of everything that exists. Right? And you can also bring in the explanation of dependent arising. If things are dependent arising, they don't exist from their own side. So you can kind of mix that into it. So that's a great answer. Thank you so much. So what
Nico, Nico has his hand raised. Go ahead, Nico.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Please do.
Yeah, so I was going to, I don't know if it's the correct answer, but my understanding of it is that, so it comes with a question also. Dependent arising and emptiness, the understanding sort of is learned together and it rises together. But emptiness seems like the end, the realization of emptiness is the final step or goal. So independent arising and, or dependent arising and emptiness are sort of coming up together, but then one is the goal, or they're both the goal.
Okay, I think, Nico, you're focusing on the words. So, for example, the concept of realizing your in your mind how things exist. So we have to use language to be able to explain that. So what we are saying is, if thing exists on its own, then it has no cause. Right? So you got to put that concept in your mind.
Yes.
It has no cause. So if things have causes and conditions, they can't be static. They need causes and conditions to come and move on, right?
Right.
So they are sort of two sides of the coin. You can look at emptiness as dependent arising.
Right.
You can call emptiness and things that it is, it does not exist inherently. It's the same thing.
Yeah, my mind wants to have sort of a two realms. It's like one realm is where things exist conventionally, and one is where there's understanding that they don't exist inherently.
Right.
But those two things are together.
Well, you need to analyze that.
Yeah.
But if you look at, I don't know, because you think linear. So if you were to think about it for a second linearly, and this is just, to make it easier, phenomena is ongoing with so many causes and conditions, and things are going on all the time, from the slightest molecule, nanoparticle, to everything you see, from mountains to birds, everything. It is just dependent arising causes and conditions that come. For the moment, if you were to pause and see something in the form, it is still moving along. Causes and conditions are still working. It is still not inherently existent, and it is changing. As we speak, we are changing. As we seek, things are moving along. We simply give it a title and make it a little more concrete so we call it something. And all it is trying to tell you is that if you did not have the words or the labels, you would not see it the way we see concretely. It is just trying to get you to truly understand that because we put labels on things, we concretize things, right? So this was just an attempt to give you that use. That means you need to still analyze this, that if I am dependent arising, then your mind will say, but I see the body, I see my parts. Then you look carefully. Even those are dependent arising. Then you put the, when you really get into a deeper state of meditation and you don't think of this, you will start to get a glimpse of how things exist, but you still are functioning. So there is that, if the phenomena is moving along, there is an appearance, we perceive it. It's simply that it's not existing from its own side. It has many things going on. You can look at it from that perspective. But right now, simplistically speaking, you can just say that we are also dependent arising. Because of causes and conditions, we are dependent arising. Therefore, we don't exist from our own side. And therefore, this feeling we get of concreteness kind of diminishes. That's the way right now. If you can just hang on to that and do a little more reading, and maybe these concepts, you have to remember that Dr. Jinpa even said, Then we talk about emptiness and we talk about form. Then we think, oh, emptiness is different and form is different because of the words. But in other words, they all kind of come together. Form is empty and emptiness is form. So you got to think through it. It is not easy, like I said, but you got to get these concepts in your head and then try to understand it through analysis and then have conversations. And then it will, at one point, you will get a glimpse of that feeling. Okay?
Can I say something? Even I trying to understand, obviously, the emptiness of the I and the conventional I have to say that I understand that even Mr. Putin, I have compassion for Mr. Putin, but I have a different compassion for Mr. Putin that I have for Hammond, for example. Even if he's conventional, it's a little different compassion that I still struggling to have between this conventional person and another conventional person.
Right. It requires a lot of, because we see things from our perspective. We see how, of course, if you're on the other side, you see their point of view. You see on this side, you see your point of view. The best thing to do is not personalize it to the point where you are impacted so strongly that you lose your own mind. And so all it can do is right now, conventionally speaking, you can neutralize it, but you can also feel sorry that this kind of nonsense is going around in the world. I understand that. For our level, at least, that kind of thinking can be there. But you can have compassion for people who are dying. You can have compassion for people who are suffering. At least you attempt to do that slowly. And that is a good beginning. Okay. So we'll move on, Nico. So what is ignorance in your mind? Just a little 1-2-point answer.
For me?
Somebody.
Well, what is ignorance? Yeah. I've been considering the 12 points or steps.
Yep. 12 links, the same thing.
Yeah, links. The links. And I was reading the section in Liberation of the Palm of Your Hand, or maybe it was the Essence of Vast and Profound, but I was reading and I was looking at the image of all the links, and maybe it's mistaken to try and follow them along, but I was, it seems like between death and ignorance, or, the bardo state is in there. Is that correct?
Yep.
And so prime opportunity to sort of jump out of the, before you go into ignorance again.
Right. So it's talking about before death, and it gives you a little, talks about little bardo, because they're trying to tell you that before death, if you're clinging on to something, you have to realize that when you're in a bardo, you're not going to recognize that that was so-and-so. Your current activity takes over. So it's very important. It's trying to show you it's very important what you put in your mind. And if you understand that you do not understand how the reality is, and you carry a lot of these 12 links we talk about, this clinging and grasping, then it can impact your next birth. So it's trying to give you an example of that. And what I would say is, ignorance is an active misknowledge of reality. It is a cause of cyclic existence, as you just mentioned. It is the cause of uncontrolled death and rebirth. It is also the cause of destructive emotions. And it is a concept that adheres to true. And it kind of looks at everything truly existent. Because when we say that I am me, you are you, and I don't like you, I love you. So we create these emotions and attachments. And then when that attachment doesn't get what it wants, now it's angry. And this becomes part of your mind thinking. And then we project all these things onto those kind of things. And we carry that. That's what our mind becomes. And then when the time comes to go, that's what's hanging in there very strongly. And guess what it finds? It goes where it wants to go. So it's just that if you can remove that and understand how things are and cut off some of this, all Buddha is saying that if you can cut off this, he's not saying that there's a switch there, right? You have to work on it. Sorry.
Yeah, I was reading that and I was thinking about, you know, where does, and this may be beyond this conversation, I think I've asked a similar question to Geshe-la, and I think he said we argue about this in the monastery endlessly, but the point where you entered that cyclic, the wheel, and then the reason I'm that seems to weigh on my conscience is that I wonder, you know, is that related to how you would get out of the wheel? You know, if there's a cause for entering ignorance, then there's a cause that has the effect of exiting or going out. And does that, can that happen anywhere on the wheel? Or is it a specific, is there a cause and effect basically, or emptiness is beyond cause and effect?
That's not good. It can happen anytime.
Right.
The problem is you have to eradicate those obscurations. And that's the analysis and meditation. People have gotten enlightened in one life. Sorry. So we can talk about that. Let's have that conversation. So let's go to the next one. I can't get my, oh, there it is. Okay. How about this one? Can I get some water? Anybody?
Can you repeat the question? I didn't
hear. What does the emptiness have to do with liberation and enlightenment? Sorry.
So, Giovanna, so if we realize emptiness, so we understand what is the reality and not what you say, the... the not what the things appear, but the reality of the things. Then we can be liberated, enlightened, because we know exactly that what is the fix. I can explain in English that we can. Like suffering, we don't suffer more because we know the reality of the suffering that is not suffering, but is suffering again. So I can't explain. Sorry.
No, I think I'm muted. Am I muted?
No.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
Let's say that it's an actual antidote to ignorance, isn't it?
Liberation
is an antidote. So once you are liberated and you can see how things exist, then you will have attachment is gone, aversions are gone, the three poisons are eradicated, and so then you are liberated.
Yes, but you say you are liberated, yes, but all these obstacles are gone. That means that we understand, not understand, it's not the word, we see the emptiness of these things. So if you see the reality, empty, that these things are empty in, not empty as like a cup, the reality of these things, that we have no more to take care of these things. Because that's the thing.
But you are in a state of mind. Your mind is aware. Your mind's nature is to know everything. It is simply not attaching the self into that. And so it looks at things, and that is a state of liberation. There is no more this feeling of you don't have fear left. Your mind is totally sees the things as they are. So it just loses the concept of how we see our image and name and body and the labels. It is just a simple way of explaining that when you are in the samsara, you are in this constant life's, you know, name and grasping and clinging. Then that goes away. You are then liberated from samsaric cyclic, all of this dukkha, we call it. That's what it's trying to say.
Yes.
I think I'm going to keep this to the last one and then we'll move on to the meditation. So name one of the most famous teachings that Lord Buddha gave on the emptiness. Very easy, guys.
Heart Sutra.
You got it. That's all I'm going to say. Heart is all about mind and it's all about emptiness. So it's called in Sanskrit has a big name, Hridaya, Madhyamaka, Prajna Paramita. It simply means wisdom of emptiness. Okay, perfection. Wisdom of perfection. And I'm going to move on to this now and then let's do a little practice. I just wanted to just very quickly say that think about emptiness and discuss it with your spiritual friend. These conversations, you can see, there are still a lot of questions in the mind. And the only way to answer it is really sit down and take some time to discuss it. I wish we can meet at Kadampa Center and take an hour and I can go through some steps and talk and we can bring Geshe-la in and really get into understanding of it. But what happens with a lot of us is we want an answer. We kind of get a little intelligence. We know some words, but there's still so many doubts because it's so much in our mind. And it takes a little time to really understand it and see if these words, how are they playing with you? Meditate on it, analyze it, ask questions, talk with your friends, and slowly you move a little inch forward. It doesn't come very quickly because right now your mind is going to project and interpret as you've been thinking in given that scope only. It will say, but wait a minute, I see this way, I see that way. It's still that feeling. But when you keep a little way away and start to see what it's trying to convey to you and how it can liberate you, maybe it starts to fill in. But again, it requires, it's a lifelong learning. Okay, it's not something you can go to. You are on a good start. At least you know what the topic is talking about. So meet with your spiritual friends and talk about this. And I am free also. We can talk sometimes. Hopefully send me an email. Let's have a group of people and talk about some things. And maybe it will help me too. Okay? So then meditate on the conclusion of your understanding as it evolves. So you will see, you'll get one thing off. Second thing will come up. Then how about this? But how come I think this way? What happens after death? What happens in birth? All this will come up. Obviously, we have an hour and a half. We cannot talk the entire Buddhist practice in here, but there are some things we can certainly bring. And it's also important that when there are obstacles, they say purification and accumulation of merit certainly helps. If you've heard of Vajrasattva, even this sounds funny. What do you mean by purification? Purification of what? Right? But purification, there's a Vajrasattva practice that is the confession to Buddha's frustrations. But when you really do that, and your mind starts to say that I have obstacles in my mind. And when you focus on this purification, this practice itself is so powerful. It starts to purify and the teachings come a little better. A lot of times you start to think, I must be stupid. I can't get this. Don't beat yourself upon that. Sometimes a simple practice creating some merits puts you in a frame of mind and you'll be amazed how, and you take a break, come back to it, do some things you can do to help your mind, and you will see that things will come in again. I do that. Sometimes it gets so much in my mind that I'll go for a walk. I'll do an hour walk in the woods. Just look, don't think. And then slowly it comes back in, but you're constantly there. It's constant. This is not a subject that you think about for 15 minutes and then do your thing. You make it part of your life. Every time you do something, think how it relates to that. When you say something, see how it relates to that. you eventually you weave it into your life. That's when you start to, it will start to make sense. And of course, we talked about ethics is a foundation of concentration. You need to be, if your mind is tormented, if your mind is in the wrong place, then it's hard for you to concentrate on nature of things. So you need to have some sort of a discipline in mind so that you can say, okay, I need to cut this out from my head so I can work on this. We all do that for many other reasons. So that's important. I also wanted to quickly share this, you know, the different resources. There are so many resources, but at least some things that I go to and I have looked at, you know, you can take a picture of it or I can send it to Linda and Linda can share it with you. Okay. Good. We're going to do a quick meditation. And then I have just one small slide to just show you and nothing to talk about. But let's do a meditation. Okay, just take your position right now that is suitable for meditation. And just relax. And just contemplate the emptiness of selflessness or the phenomena. We already meditated on the selflessness of the persons, which is the type of selflessness that we should first become acquainted with. However, we need to expand our understanding of selflessness by recognizing that everything is selfless. And the self here meaning inherent or true existence. Nagarjuna said in his book, The Precious Garland, that if we only understand the selflessness of the person, but not the selflessness of the phenomena, we will not have an antidote to attachment to the phenomena, as that attachment arises from the belief that things inherently exist. Also, he said that the belief that the inherently existent person arises from the belief in the inherently existing body and mind. Some philosophers taught the selflessness of the person, but asserted the true existence of the phenomena like atoms and moments and awareness and production and so forth. But the Prasangika philosophers asserted the negation for persons as well as everything else. Prasangika is the middle way. It provides a very efficient way to meditate on both the selflessness of the person and the phenomena. You can use your understanding of the selflessness of the persons to understand the selflessness of everything else. So when you complete your meditation session, remember that whatever appears to you like a rainbow or the conjurations of a magician are like a conjuration of a magician. As these things that appear as they are concrete and abiding their own essence are in fact appearance of independent origination. Think of things like a circle created when you take a flashlight or a torch and make a whoosh around. The sparklers is another good one. You can make designs in the air, in the night, with the sparklers, but these designs are not actually hanging there in the space. What is there, to so to speak, it is simply a bright light that you're moving rapidly. Everything you perceive is like that. There are appearances of the interactions of other things. Similarly, you can meditate on the selflessness of the mind by thinking that it too is empty of true existence, like the person, because it too is dependent arising. You can extend this to your karma and the Four Noble Truths, as I mentioned in the Heart Sutra, or your possessions, your profession, your country, the planet, whatever you might be attached to and have unrealistic, exaggerated emotions for. If you would like to know more about the different ways that this selfishness exists, is presented, there are many books that we've talked about, but specifically Chandrakirti's Sevenfold Reasoning, Meditation on the Selflessness of Persons, would be a wonderful book to go to. There are many books now available that can advance your understanding of emptiness. Of course, it doesn't matter how many of these books you own if you do not study them. The study of such book is an excellent way to meditate on emptiness, because these books present reasons to prove emptiness and provide ways to both appreciate the reasons and understanding of emptiness. So we dedicate your efforts to understand this subject. It's a tough subject. And meditate on its meaning to your attainment of Buddhahood, so that you will be able to lead each and every being to the same enlightened state. And I'd like to end the class with this two slides. I've always liked these. These are in the CD that we always show in the beginning of every module. But it's what's important to me that 2,500 years ago, an Indian prince named Siddhartha from the Shakya clan decided to give up the kingdom in a search for a way out of suffering. Because of his relentless determination to find ultimate freedom, he came to understand the nature of mind and in turn the ultimate reality of phenomena. He was then called Shakyamuni Buddha. So we are all on this path, basically. And if he can do it, we can do it. There are a lot of questions, I am sure. It's exactly how I started. There are so many things came to my mind. It took a little while before some of those things started settling in, and I'm still learning. And what I really like is this part. Buddhism is a comprehensive system that shows us how to transform our minds from a state of suffering to a satisfaction, to one of an extraordinary joy, awareness, and contentment. Vast in scope and profound in its implication, it accommodates every kind of mental disposition, but retains a laser-like precision that shows us what is to be accepted and what is to be rejected. It was realized and embodied by a human being just like us. So if Buddha can do it, we can do it. I'm more than happy, if you want to connect at some point, form a small group to have a discussion on that. It will all help us. We are more than happy to do it. But with that, this session comes to an end.